Tonight's Fear the Walking Dead recap is sponsored by TrueCar. When you're looking to buy a car, you want to make sure you're getting real pricing on actual inventory. Unfortunately, a lot of times this isn't the case. People can configure a car online only to later find out that that price and that car is not even available. With TrueCar, you get real pricing on actual inventory, not pricing that's offered by TrueCar, pricing that's offered by the actual dealer, and not just any dealer, but a TrueCar certified dealer. This is a carefully curated network of dealers committed to transparency and offering you a competitive market price. Using TrueCar, you'll easily find the car that you want, and TrueCar will show you what other people in your area paid for the same car you're looking for. Now you know what a fair price is, so you can feel confident. Over 3 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network, with over 13,000 TrueCar Certified Dealers nationwide. Best of all, TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off of MSRP. So when you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. Fear the Walking Dead, episode 4 of season 3 is over, but we're just getting started here on the Fear the Walking Dead post-show recap. And now here are the guys who are the 5th and 6th Beatles, respectively. I'm Rob Sisterino here in the studio with Alex Kidwell. Alex, how are you?
Doing good, Rob.
Yes.
I'm one of the Beatles.
Wow. Oh, my God. Is there a appropriate Beatles song for tonight?
It's a hard day's night.
They all are on Fear the Walking Dead for Daniel Salazar and Strand.
Daniel got that free ticket to ride, that's for sure.
Yes, he did by the end of the episode. And so we saw the Daniel Salazar backstory, basically a year in the making on this. We saw him in the back half of season 2, nowhere to be found. And so he was not part of the gang that went to the hotel. He was lost at the compound with the Pozole.
Seemingly trapped in a fire.
Right.
We always felt like he was getting out of there, though. This guy is plenty capable, it seems.
Yeah, I think it was right around the time that we were coming out of the Glenn is under the dumpster era on Walking Dead proper. And I think that the showrunners were very clear to say, no, we think Daniel Salazar is alive. We think we'll be seeing him again. Like, they didn't really, I think it might have been written to be like, ooh, who knows? But I felt like they gave you a lot of assurances. We saw him come back. There was a little bit of a specter of, literally, is he a specter of like, wait, is he imagining him? But no, this was the full-on Daniel Salazar backstory, and then it was basically like 75% prologue, and then we moved the story forward. And I'm actually very surprised that we killed off Dante after just 2 nights. I thought we were setting him up to be like this other big bad here in season 3, but nope, Dante is done.
Yeah, how about that?
Dante.
It must be, you know, the Ottos then, you know, who are going to end up being some kind of, sure, you know, because they're the only other established potentially nefarious characters, being that they may have Ophelia, which is the last remaining question mark now that we've caught up with Daniel here.
Now, do you think that we are going to be adding a bunch of members? That we obviously lost Travis at the beginning of the season and lost Chris at the end of last season. Are we needing to repopulate the show a little bit? And do you feel like Ephraim and Lola are going to be now key contributors?
Well, it looks like Ephraim is on the Talking Dead cast tonight, so I think that's that bodes well for his career future.
That doesn't mean anything. That doesn't necessarily mean anything.
I mean, it doesn't hurt, I think, when your character debuts and they bring in, I think he has some longevity at this point. I mean, you know, if they survive this, then, you know, who's after him now that Dante's off the board?
Just putting it out there with the Fear of the Walking Dead couch, I don't know how much of a tell that is, because the girl that like they left out on the raft that then came back, that was on the plane, that she was on Fear of the Walking Dead, and then they didn't end up doing anything with her character.
Hey, Alex is about to be a major character in season 5, all right? You don't know.
All right, well, we'll see.
Still out there.
All right, we got the Daniel Salazar backstory tonight. Was the juice worth the squeeze on the Daniel Salazar backstory?
I think so. I think so. For no other reason than I think we really got a good feel for like the political hierarchy at the dam. Everything.
But the dam is done.
In theory, but now, you know, the water is still the currency of the time, as Strand would put it. And so now that Dante's off the board, will they, you know, just like give it to the masses? Like, how will the water be distributed? Water still needs to be distributed, and that's still going to be a thing.
Oh, I think they're just going to turn on the hose and then get the hell out of there. I mean, but it looks like by the next episode, yeah, we're going to get all of our characters, Salazar and Strand, off with joining the Otto storyline. So,
oh, you think so?
I think that this is it with the water. I don't think that we're going to be spending any more time here in the dam storyline.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I could see it that way, but then also, like, Strand is such an opportunist that to have that resource there with a vacuum of power.
Oh, Strand is going to be the new the new water overlord of Tijuana?
I am the president of Tijuana now.
Now all the water is mine. Would you like a drink? No. They're going to go and go look for Ophelia. They're not going to hang out and be involved. I mean, maybe they turn it over to Lola and Ephraim. Maybe that's going to be the thing. But I don't really think that we're going to continue on with this subplot of, you know, trying to be running the water racket.
Yeah, I think that's fair. yeah, I mean, right. Well, he needs a Jeep. I mean, he could fill up all the Jeffrey's got a lot of jugs, spare jugs. Fill up the jugs and take them on the road so that you have some water. And yeah, that makes
right.
sense.
So let's go back to the Daniel Salazar backstory, because I did feel like, you know, it was a fun hour of TV. Again, I don't know how much Lola and Ephraim is their backstory also, or if it's just going to be like, see, you wouldn't want to be after this hour. We got to see Daniel sort of like left for dead after the big fire at the compound. And he ultimately ends up meeting Ephraim, who saves his life early in the episode. And we don't really get a backstory on Ephraim. Are we setting up for the Ephraim backstory episode?
I can't imagine. I think we got what we're going to get. Like, you know, we got enough. Tijuana fell. There's still some lingering remnants of people hanging out in the city that don't want to be found by the guys driving around in the poor agua trucks with the giant turrets on them. So, you know, they're hiding out, and they found this fountain that, like, every Tuesday at 5 p.m. just emits some free gold there for you, and they've got a good thing going, so they don't want to mess it up. But yeah, I think Ephraim is, he's kind of the Robin Hood of water here, a little bit.
Right. And Lola, we find out, is working on the inside. She's one of the people that helps Daniel where he has this leg condition from the fire. I thought it was interesting, though, in the episode where they have to like do this sort of field surgery on Daniel, and they're cutting up his leg. And then at the point where he is having the battle with the walker with perhaps the divine intervention and the lightning bolt, like, he's on a crutch at that point, and then by the time he washes up in the sewer, totally fine, no limp, nothing.
He's a survivor, that guy. Yeah, for sure. I mean, they weren't sure he was even going to be able to keep the leg, but, you know, who knows? Maybe he's in that sewer, he was in a coma for a week.
Right. Is there some fountain of youth / regenerative properties in this water where it somehow healed Daniel Salazar?
Yeah, it's like that Darth Vader chamber with like the whatever that fluid is that just...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I mean, it looked like just water to me.
Did they just say, okay, we're done with Daniel Salazar having an injury?
Yeah, I guess so. We saw him limp through like 5 macro shots. What else do you need?
All right, so we don't need to have him limping anymore. He needs to go back to being a badass by the time we get him with Dante.
Yeah, I don't want to see him struggling to like outrun one undead rave chick. Like, that was kind of pathetic for Daniel. He's better than that.
Yes, yes, he is better than that. It was sad to see him in the beginning of the episode where, like, he wasn't even going to attempt to try to kill her. Yeah, he was just trying to get a, like, oh, don't hurt me.
It was like a race between a slug and a snail. She's gonna win.
What did you think about the relationship between Daniel and Ephraim? You like Ephraim?
Yeah, and I thought it was really interesting too. And like, I think you even called this while we're watching the episode, like, Daniel's gonna end up being the one that's gonna have to, like, yeah, his relationship that he developed with Dante, like, while it saved him in the moment, it clearly immediately put him in a position where it's like, yep, he's gonna be the guy who's gonna have to now, like, torture his new friends that just saved his life. And yeah, especially that moment where he's like, forgive me. And the guy's like, again, you know, like, he had just used him as like a crutch to, like, you know, get his mind
right.
No,
the crutch was what he used to break over the walker's shoulder, which, again, it's just like, he forgot how to kill walkers in this universe.
Bad call. And yeah, and then he went to his knees. It's like, dude, you still had the stick part. Just poke him in the river. That was a nice flow to that river. He would have been washed away.
We'll talk about that battle, because I think there's a lot of interesting things to get into with that battle between the Walker with the lightning bolt. But with Efrain, we have this conversation where he thinks that maybe he killed Ophelia. Now, I don't remember exactly what went down at the compound. Did Daniel Salazar start the fire?
Yeah. Daniel did start that fire.
Yes.
I think I remember right. So like Madison goes in the little, they've got like the zombie outhouse or whatever it is. Right. You know, they've got like the guest house filled with the undead former relatives and stuff. I think Maddie goes in there first and like locks up Pozzoli woman with her own undead, you know, to protect Nick.
If I recall correctly, wasn't there also some sort of like dreams and ghosts and he felt like that place was haunted something like that? Yeah.
He saw the symbolism of like the owl. And I remember, I was going on Fear the Walking Dead Reddit and trying to look up like Dios de los Muertes symbolism and stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
So that was really where we were getting off the rails.
He was getting a little crazy too.
Right. And so then he felt bad about that. He escaped. They asked him, how many people did he kill? 96, which it was interesting because later in the episode, they asked him about how many people did he kill in the Civil War, and he said he lost count. So I think that he definitely does know exactly how many people he killed.
Yeah, that's an interesting catch. Yeah, I didn't necessarily pick up on that, but yeah, that's kind of like speaks
to
the humanity.
What's that kill count by the end of the episode? 99?
Yeah, definitely.
There you
go. Pops three guys in about like 3 seconds flat.
Triple digits coming up. Wow. He's on a Maguire-like trajectory.
Yeah, even in like the Walking Dead universe, I don't know like if people are up there with him. He got a real head start on a lot of these people.
Yeah, most kills.
His Sombra Negra work there.
I think it's between him and Negan.
Yeah, yeah. Who knows what Negan was doing ahead of time. But
who knows? Anyway, we also saw Daniel break out his hair cutting that we hadn't seen that in a while, right?
Yeah. He's always got that barber gig he can fall back on in a pinch, so...
Right.
That's good. You need a barber. Every place he goes, like, he at least has some pliable trade that he can offer here. Hair continues to grow, even if the world is stopped.
Daniel's like a real Edward Scissorhands. It's like, you know, his hands are deadly, but then he can also, like, make, like, a nice piece of art with your hair.
Yeah, you just have to get to know him, really, and then he's...
You know, it's interesting. I think that back when they had, like, the bunch of objects that were on the table for him to torture Efrain with later on, I'm pretty sure, like, there was, like, hedge clippers over there. I mean, that would have been amazing if he would have just, like, gone back to work, like, maybe do you need a trim?
Chop, chop, chop.
Yeah. Right. Like, wow, you are amazing.
Yeah, there were some interesting instruments there on the table for him. Dante certainly, you know, wanted to give him his pick of the litter there.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, it does. It's a throwback to like any of the things we've seen with Daniel, you know, with reminds me of season 1 with Ophelia's boyfriend there, where he was so methodical and, you know, measured with his torturing that like, you know, this really is a guy that has some skills. And in fact, we learned that he was part of, you know, a black ops group where the CIA trained them personally. So his skills are, a result of our tax dollars.
Yeah, Dante is a great torture caddy for Salazar.
Yeah, Dante really enables him. He really takes a chance with Daniel, knowing he's really dangerous, but just assuming, you know, he kind of makes the mistake Strand makes a little bit, where he says to Strand, like, you're mistaken in thinking that because we've had good business relationships in the past, that means I owe you something or we're friends.
You owe me.
And I think, again, here with Daniel, he thinks, like, oh, I'm taking this guy in. He's clearly... He's in a bad place. If I empower him and give him everything he needs to succeed, I mean, he's been a lieutenant. He's been a military guy. He can follow orders. And I think there's just a lot of miscalculation there on Dante's part.
Yeah, but I thought it makes sense for Dante in terms of like, you know, what else do people have to do? Like, it's like, I got something set up here. It's not like you have the world is your oyster. You got a lot of options for places to be set up.
Yeah, and also it seems like a lot of his goons are really stupid. Like, a lot of those guys are just big, dumb thugs. So, like, if you could have a Daniel that's kind of micromanaging some of these idiots, I think that, yeah, that's probably a good look for him.
Yeah, certainly. So, in that conversation between Daniel and Efrain, there was another part where I liked. They sort of set up the fact that Efrain likes to drink. Daniel was looking for absolution from Efrain. I guess he thought he was a priest.
Absolute.
And so, he is, like, telling him about what he thought he did. And he sets up that Efrain loves to do a good news, bad news type thing. And he ends up saying, okay, well, you know, the good news is there's nobody left in this world to judge you. And then he falls asleep before he gets the bad news. So what was the second part of that sentence going to be?
Maybe you burned your daughter alive indeed. I don't know. Like, that's all I can guess.
Yeah, the good news is there's nobody left to judge you. The bad news is part of the reason why there's nobody left to judge you is because you killed them when you set them on fire.
Them all alive. Yes, right. Real catch 22 there.
That was the bad news. Okay. But Ephraim seems to know, like, I know about you. You're gonna leave. You're gonna leave. And we did see Daniel try to make a run for it. And that was where he ends up running into one walker, no problem. But then he runs into this other guy. Can you give me what is the professional wrestler that you would say? Like the Big Show?
It was like the Big Show crossed with like old school, like Bam Bam Bigelow or something.
Right.
I think I've seen this actor on like Black Sails as just like a
pirate.
Yeah. A big hulking menace that doesn't say anything and attacks you in the middle of the night. I think I've seen him now in a couple different shows and he doesn't have dialogue. He just like comes in the night. This big scary dude.
Yeah.
It's the new mountain.
We don't get a lot of menacing walkers. Like, yeah. This guy looked like he was in a gang and he was a big guy.
Yeah, the lightning flashes and he looks like, yeah, he's right out of Vikings. Like, oh.
Yeah. And Daniel breaks the crutch over him. And then, you know, he like falls to the ground. And as you mentioned, like he doesn't even attempt to do anything. Daniel, I felt like, was giving himself up to the walker at that point.
Yeah, and I felt like there was a few moments, you know, again with Lola, I think he is offering himself there for sacrifice. I think he's trapped in a lot of self-loathing. You know, it's a shame that ultimately Strand is kind of deceptive because Ophelia is alive, as far as we know, and Salazar is now convinced that she isn't. He's like looking for someone to take him out of this, you know, never-ending misery that he's been living for so long, I think, in many respects.
So to add to that, I felt like this lightning bolt almost was divine intervention in my mind, that it was like Daniel Salazar gave himself up to the universe and said, take me, basically. I don't want to go on. And what happens here? An act of God, literally a lightning bolt strikes a walker in the head, taking him out.
I mean, he is a tall guy, but...
He is a tall guy, but I mean, that to say that this is like, you know, we did this a lot on The Leftovers with, you know, could this possibly be explained by science? Yeah, but what's the... It's a 1,000,000,000-to-1 shot, right?
Yeah, especially on the same day that he just got a 1,000,000,000-to-1 shot with Ephraim coming along right at the right moment. I mean, he really has been sleeping with angels in recent times. And yeah, Ephraim, you know, saying the prayer and kind of doing his like little ritual that he does. I mean, I think there's a few moments here that could be interpreted as like potential religious symbolism.
I mean, a bolt of lightning comes down. And that's the thing about a bolt of lightning. You never know exactly when or where one is about to strike. I also felt like that walker's head should have just exploded like a watermelon at a Gallagher show, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, right. What is more of like a blender effect than just like super powerful lightning to your face? Like, I don't know how that didn't happen. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that this guy was so tough that he was just so
thick hide.
Solid. So solid that nothing was gonna, you know.
He was like wearing bear skins and stuff too. Like, where'd he come from? Why is he at like a legitimate reservoir? He should have been just in the woods forever.
So Daniel Salazar and this like mountain walker that's been struck by lightning, they end up just getting like what, washed away in the river? How does Daniel Salazar survive this? He's just like bobbing along, like, and even though he's passed out, he's...
Or like, you know, maybe they both washed in together and then maybe if the big guy was on top of him, but like the bear coat was around him, maybe it makes like a canoe effect where you can breathe even though it's like, I'm reaching.
He also seemed to be like buried under like a foot of sludge also at the time that he was found.
Yeah, you would think you'd have choked on some of that refuse.
Yeah, but that was not the case. And they found him, and then he ends up being found by a team at the water treatment plant, including Lola, who was the person that nursed him back to health. She's not going to reveal who he is, and so she gets him working on the factory line.
Yeah, pretty nice of her, really. I mean, she's really doing him a couple solids here.
Yeah. And so he's like, you know, minding his own business and he's just trying to eat his spam one day.
Yeah. I'd like to think it was strawberry cake, but God,
strawberry cake.
It looked like some really soft meat products.
Yeah. You think Dante is making strawberry cake for his janitors?
He's got resources. Why not bring in a baker?
Yeah.
Get a little dulce de leche, you know.
Can they make pozole? Can they do a pozole?
One would certainly hope. They've got the water.
They've got the water, but I don't know what else they have.
Halfway there.
And Daniel Salazar gets in trouble for not standing to reach Dante. Another thing I like about Dante, months into the apocalypse, The guy's still wearing a suit to work.
Yeah, it seems to be the same suit every day, too.
Well, what do you think? Is there a dry cleaner?
But it looks good.
It does look good.
It's not getting ratty either. So, you know, it's being taken care of.
I feel like that once, you know, the civilization breaks down, I feel like that we could just adopt Casual Friday.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm a pretty casual dresser already.
Right.
You're not going to get me fighting you on this.
I think that Dante can just like, I mean, he could wear Dockers. He could. You know, just a button shirt. I don't think he needs, I mean, it looks very hot there in Tijuana.
Although this is a guy clearly obsessed with image. I mean, he wants people to be used as messengers in pretty drastic senses. So he's all about sending the right message and crafting the proper image for, you know, eliciting fear in the people that he's lording his water over.
But I feel like even like a Tommy Bahama shirt, I think would do the trick. Yeah. We get the message out there.
TGIF.
Yeah, I think that people would know, like, you know, Dante means business. He wears a suit. The apocalypse has been going on for 6 months. The guy still wears a suit, okay? He's crazy. Don't mess with him. Yeah. And the suit, it still looks pretty good. Yeah. It's not ratty. It's pretty good. I mean, it's the same one every day, but, yeah, you know, you'd think it would be worse.
Beggars can't be choosers.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Like, really? A whole suit? Yeah. Like, yeah. Anyway, Dante knows who Salazar is. Like, Salazar is kind of a household name in terms of people that have been through the Civil War.
Right. I mean, what he was describing, certainly really serious. And Dante seems to be a student of regime changes in, you know, he was a politician in Tijuana. So he should know some of the major players in Central America. And so I think as a result, yeah, it's, you know, Salazar's reputation clearly precedes him in a lot of circles. Dante is impressed with what he's heard.
What do we know about Sombra Negra?
So, yeah, I was looking this up a little bit during one of the commercial breaks. So that's it's Spanish for Black Shadow. And that was a group that was funded by the United States government that was basically a kill squad made up predominantly of like former military operatives and just people with real legitimate training in Salvador during this kind of, you know, I mean, the U.S. government had a real history in the, you know, during the Cold War of like, we're not going to send in troops, but we're going to train you how to beat the communists in your own country. So it was definitely that, where Salazar was a U.S. empowered operative who was like basically given free rein to do whatever was necessary to curb communism in Salvador.
Okay, so Dante says, this is the guy I want on my team.
Clearly hates communism as a guy who wants all the water to himself, so that speaks right to him.
Well, he said when they were talking about, like, with the water, he's like, hey, I can't give it away. This isn't communism, yeah. Daniel.
It may be the apocalypse, but it's right. Still not communism. Right. That was a good
he's
line.
Like trying to, like, appeal to him. Like, I know how do you hate communism. Come on. Yeah.
And again, I think a mischaracterization, because I don't know that Daniel hates communism. I think Daniel is...
likes
soldier
people.
Of fortune. You know what I mean? Like he sees opportunities and he takes them. I think he probably in many ways, he was a member and rose through the ranks in Salvador because he knew it was means and passage for him and his wife and his daughter to the States. I mean, obviously that was a big factor in getting him where he is. So
he just wanted to be a barber.
Family first. Yeah. And he just wanted to, yeah, just move into a nice little town in Encino and just, you know, not bother anybody.
So Dante says, I have a problem I need you to solve. And then you can basically get a Jeep or whatever you want to do. And we find that that problem is that there is a thief who is, it's an inside job. There's somebody is stealing water. And it goes back to this same fountain of life that ended up resuscitating Daniel.
Yeah, Chekhov's dry fountain.
Chekhov's dry fountain.
Both
which,
times they're like, it's dry. And then sure enough, not at Tuesday at 5.
Every Tuesday at 5. Now, is Lola like turning on the water Tuesday at 5? Is that what the, you know, the premise is?
It's got to be either that or she's like opened certain valves to the point where like now like something that's like a pre-scheduled thing flows to that specific location where it didn't before because those valves were closed or something.
Okay. So Salazar, he's on sort of this mission to find out what's going on and they bring him back there. And luckily Ephraim is not there at that time. But what was the tape recorder?
That's what Ephraim has to, you know, go out and do the Robin Hood thing, I think. I mean, it draws out the scattered remnants of Tijuana.
But did we see the tape recorder the first time?
So when he's driving the bike and he's got Salazar in the front, it's playing Agua, Agua. And it seems really dumb and counterintuitive because it's drawing so many walkers. And that's why they have to, like, take the steps, you know, derecha, you know, he has to turn on a dime and do all this stuff. but it's because he's got this giant tape recorder that's drawing seemingly more walkers than people. It doesn't seem very sensible, given that Tijuana's kind of overrun.
Yeah, I did think that that was a pretty good action sequence of the on the bicycle.
It's like that game Courier Crisis that I used to play on PlayStation, where you had like just a short amount of time on a bike to like get through a crowded LA and like deliver a package. And
I was going to say like Paperboy.
Yeah, like Paperboy, exactly.
No, I'm not talking about those guys from Atlanta.
No.
No, that's different. No. That's different. Anyway, so Salazar ends up telling Lola that he was part of this, and he said basically that the jig is up with Ephraim, right?
Yeah, yeah, pretty much that it's only a matter of time until they catch him if he, you know, continues to do what he's doing. And really what, you know, you need to be protecting yourself, thinking about the consequences of the fact that they're very close to getting you guys here.
Yeah.
She doesn't want to.
Yeah, and she basically calls out Daniel for being a thug. And you belong with these guys, you're a thug. And Daniel's saying, like, look, I can't save people that are going to be, you know, dead anyway. This is a bad idea. Stop doing this.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the nature of going through a life as hard as Daniel's, is it does kind of practicality sometimes takes priority over humanity. And I think that's something that Lola just can't get down with.
We end up then getting back to the point where last week's episode ended with Strand in the jail cell talking with Daniel, and Strand ends up telling Salazar that Ophelia is alive. She's at the hotel. Now, she's not at the hotel, but does Strand know she's not at the hotel?
Strand is, again, just says too much. Like, I think the same thing with Dante, where it's like less would have been more almost. I don't know if it would have worked with Dante, but clearly with Daniel, Strand messes up by continuing to run his mouth. I mean, yeah, he's lying. He's trying to get Daniel to get him out of there. He didn't need to lie. I think there's a play here where it's like, Daniel, I know Ophelia survived the fire because we left in the same truck. We got separated. Stuff got crazy, but she is out there. She is alive. Free me from here and we will find her. You don't need to, like, he's trying to set Daniel up on a silver platter to make it like, to paint the perfect picture that would make Daniel want to rescue him. But it's too perfect. It's just too much. And Salazar is too clever.
He pisses Daniel off.
And he says the key thing, which is that she's waiting for you. And literally 3 sentences ago, she doesn't know you're alive. You know what I mean? So he really contradicts himself there. And Daniel catches him in that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. That's a good catch on that. Salazar's like, you son of a bitch.
Like, yes. What'd you just say?
Yes.
That's not what you just said.
Yeah. And so Strand is going to be stranded there because Salazar is basically saying that this place is perfect for you.
Yeah, really, really stranded indeed.
Yeah. Ophelia is dead. Her father is dead. And so are you, Strand.
Heartbreaking too, because Strand is like, he started out on the right foot. He seems lately, at least this season, Strand is kind of one step forward, 2 steps back so far.
Yeah, well, Strand goes back to his thing of, hey, I saved you. You owe me. You know, he feels like everybody owes him. He's trying to collect on a lot of these debts.
I think it just speaks to that he's never in his life been in this position, right? Because Strand, when the shoe was on the other foot, he never feels obligated to people. He's a practical man. You know,
right.
When he had the boat and everyone needs him, he's very practical and very, you know, unsure about just, you know, repaying favors willy-nilly to Nick and whoever else. But yeah, I mean, at this point now he's down. I don't know that this guy's ever been down in his life. He's out of cufflinks to barter with and really feeling the effects of not having any chips to cash in.
And people that have listened to a lot of my Survivor podcasts and also any of the 49 Laws of Survivor that we did, the, hey, you owe me is never a compelling argument.
Yep. No.
Rarely works.
Especially if they're following the laws of power and are despising the free lunch.
Right, right. Hey, you owe me, not nearly as
good.
They were
never going to pay you back because they never appreciated it the way you hoped they would.
I know we have not gotten along. I know that, you know, I've screwed you over, but here's what I can do for you now in the future, moving forward.
See, and he had that to offer. Help me out and we will find Ophelia. But he turned right when he should have turned left. I think he still puts a little too much stock in his ability to spin a yarn. And some of these guys are pretty keen, astute observers in the art of like human behavior. They can spot a lie.
Yep. And Daniel, his services are needed. Basically, he has to leave Strand and they need your torturing services because guess what? We found Ephraim.
Yep.
Oh, no.
Lieutenant Salazar's work is never done.
It's a real O. Henry saga for Salazar here in this episode. On the one hand, Ephraim nursed him back to health. And now, on the other hand, he has to now torture out of him the information of how this water-stealing operation is going that ultimately saved Daniel Salazar's life.
And in front of Lola, no less.
In front of Lola, yeah.
I mean, it really is. I mean, on the one hand, he did try to tell them this was going to happen, but, you know, a little bit too little too late, I think. They were kind of already, it seemed like the trucks were closing in even when he first found Daniel. So it was only a matter of time, it seems like.
But overall, and I haven't really given a big picture view, but I did like this episode. I felt like this was a nice little self-contained story with a beginning, middle, and end.
A lot of times with these, we end up finding more to criticize, I think, more often than
what,
not.
What do you mean, like with
Tabitha the goat stuff, and you know, I mean,
oh,
some
I
of these
you meant
one-off,
just like Fear the Walking Dead.
No,
episodes.
Just some of these one-offs that the Walking Dead or Fear will do to bring a character back that we haven't seen in a while, like
I
the
think
Morgan.
The Tabitha the goat story, and that's the Morgan backstory episode. I think the issue there was it was 90 minutes, and it was right in the midst of a lot of things that were going on. I think that a lot of times the show has done this at inopportune times,
or like with the governor. That seems kind of out of play. It was like in the middle
of
the
season.
Well,
that was two episodes. Also back to back.
Yeah.
I think everybody was fine with one, but this was fine, especially to reintroduce Daniel Salazar, who was a character who was off the show for about a year. So this was, I mean, I have no issue with this. I mean, I don't like to go a week without getting the other characters, but I feel like that this was probably as artful of a way to do it as you could have done it.
And I think also the fact that we've just recently lost Travis, that yeah, I mean, there's, you know, there's a bit of a vacuum here in terms of like major role players. It seemed like maybe Dante was going to be one of those. That's clearly not the case.
No,
so,
but that was like an open and shut case with Dante. So this was good. And it was like 75% backstory and then 25% moving the ball forward. And also they introduced the story of the dam and now it's over, I feel like. And we're not going to like, you know, stretch it out for a half season of what's going to happen at the dam. What happened at the dam happened and we're ready to move on.
Yeah. Just take some water for the road.
Take some water for the road. It's a nice pit stop.
Ephraim's got jugs for days.
That's right. But Ephraim knows where the water fountain is, and now it's up to Daniel Salazar to get it out of him. I could not tell. Tell me if this was just like a TV production, you know, thing that just like we just have to go with it. When Daniel talks to Ephraim, seemed like he was talking pretty loud. Didn't seem like he was whispering, saying a lot of things that Dante could have been like, excuse me?
Hey.
Yeah. Hey, hold on a second. I mean, wasn't he kind of like talking a little loud?
I guess. I don't know. He's done this many a time. I think he knows, you know, what can be heard from what distance at this point. He's a master of whispering and torturing and crafts of the shadows.
It was not like a whispering in his ear. It's not like he got him like in a sleeper hold and was like, okay, let me tell you like how they're going to tell you like what the wrestlers are going to tell each other the next move is going to be. I mean, it was like, okay, sure. But I guess that because Dante didn't react to it, then ultimately he must not have heard. And finally, after Daniel Salazar like punches him in the face a bunch of times, like, it's not working. I guess I lost my magic touch.
Yeah. Although it was a little bit, he's like, I'm going to try to kill you as quick as possible. And then he just starts wailing on him with two fists. I'm like, that's a slow way to do this.
Yeah. But, you know, Daniel Salazar, I'll follow his lead on it. If he says that that's the fast way to do it, then I believe
him. Yeah, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah. And eventually Lola is going to step in. And then so the jig is up. And then again, with Dante, he does a flair for the dramatic. And he only knows one way how to kill people, and that's by, you know, making
full
them walk
tilt.
The plank. Right. And so he brings up a whole cast of characters up there to send a message to everybody. Very dramatically, you have to be thrown off the top of the dam. He can't just shoot you.
And it's not even a perfect drop. Like, everyone hits their head on that pipe on the way down. It's like, it's not okay.
And so they're going to, and I guess Strand also, I don't know why they didn't throw Strand, like why they had Strand up there last week and they put him back in the brig.
Put the fear of God into him.
Right. I guess was that they brought him up there and then they told him they were gonna put him in and they put him in the brig instead and then they decided, okay, now your time is up.
That's
Strand.
All I can figure is it was a change of policy regarding Strand, because Dante had said in the last episode, like, I'm gonna make you're going to work and suffer for all the like benefiting you did on the backs of others in your first life, you know. So I thought he was gonna like really throw him in the fields. I thought maybe it was gonna be Strand digging through the refuse there, but I guess he doesn't trust him to have free range of the area.
Or maybe he figured that Strand, okay, all right, that was enough. You know, that was like, you kind of like screwed over Thomas Abigail, but that like 4 days worth. Now it's time to kill you. Like, oh no, I was much worse.
Or maybe he tried. Maybe he let him out and like let him in the kitchen and said, like, you get to, you know, well, you can cook and earn your keep. And then he burned the pizzas right, or something. And now it's game
so
over.
So they threw one guy off, and then it was now Daniel had to throw Lola off to, I guess, prove himself to Dante. And then we got to see Salazar pull the gun on them and then kill Dante. I was very surprised that they killed off Dante in that spot.
Not a good strategic move from Dante to call him a dog there in that moment where he's got a gun to his head and he's like seemingly wavering.
Right.
You really made the decision for him there in that moment.
Yeah. And then we then saw Salazar hand over the gun to Lola and says, all right, here, do you forgive me? And she did. So
it was like the third time in the episode too that he's almost like resigned himself to sacrifice. And once again, like, he, you know, a hand is extended, he's lifted up. And Daniel, if he hasn't found whatever absolution he was looking for at this point, I think he's going to be hard pressed to ever find.
Okay, let me ask you some quick questions. So obviously we're now on the road for Ophelia. We're looking for Ophelia. How does Strand and Salazar, maybe Ephraim and Lola, how do they end up finding the Otto camp?
I think they knew everyone was heading north. I think the plan is you gradually head north. You hit that border eventually and the place where Nick and Luciano were ambushed. And, you know, that's, as far as I know, there's still like a team, you know, I guess maybe Team Alpha they haven't heard from, but there's got to be some Otto outposts in that area. And I got to think that at some point, you know, that Jeep driving down the road is going to be spotted by some of these military guys. And we're going to have some kind of intervention that way.
Did Dante's people shoot down Travis's helicopter?
I could see it, right? Because it does seem like that's, at least as far as we know, the only other major faction in this immediate area. I mean, there may be some others out there, but it does seem like they might be close enough. I mean, the Ottos really are just on the other side of the border, and it seems like this dam is like right there, kind of right on the edge. So hard to know exactly how close they are to each other, but it's possible. I mean, clearly Dante has the resources, has the weaponry. I mean, they've got legitimate turrets and all kinds of assault weapons. So a sniper rifle would not be out of the realm of possibility for sure.
I'd guess no, though, because they killed off Dante. If Dante was alive and well, I'd say, oh, okay, well, maybe this is how we ultimately are going to connect these two storylines. But without Dante, I don't know necessarily. Like, it didn't seem like there is, like, that they wanted Daniel Salazar, basically, to be the vice president of Dante. And that there just seems like there's no number two there that they're going to be able to set up as somebody to take over. So I really feel like that the damn storyline is over.
Yeah, he didn't have a Simon. He just had a bunch of like fat Joeys lurking around there.
That's right.
So that's the problem, is you can't trust any of these kind of just goons to like, you know, if Alpha Squad went out there and were ambushed, like, that's not a plan that any of these guys are coming up with.
Okay. Do we find out what happened to Ophelia next week, or is this the full arc of the top half of season 3?
Yeah, I feel like finale. I feel like it's a bit of a Sophia reveal where, like, she may not be dead, but it's like the whole season building to where's Ophelia, and, you know, that's going to be a final kind of note on this half season, I think.
Yeah, and next week we should probably get back together with the Otto camp and maybe have Strand and Daniel start to get closer to rejoining the rest of the Clarks over at the Otto camp. Anything else from tonight's show?
No, I think we really hit all the points. It just, next week will be interesting. You know, you got Madison and Troy out on this raiding party, so mm-hmm. we might actually get some information, at least next week, on who was shooting.
Maybe they could run into Salazar.
They could run into Salazar and Strand. Obviously, this, you know, Troy-Madison relationship is still complicated and interesting, but I'm sure something will come to a head at some point with that. I mean, there's no way that's not continuing to escalate in some fashion.
Okay, what do you like for a hashtag for tonight? How about Torture Caddy?
That's good. Or Stranded.
Stranded. Stranded, I feel like...
Probably too common a hashtag.
Right, right.
There's an MTV show. There's all kinds of
things. There's lots of things. Got any other Beatles songs to circle back to the top?
Or you can just do Fifth Beatle.
The Fifth Beatle. All right, so of course, we'll be back next Sunday for more Fear the Walking Dead recapping. You could follow Alex Kidwell on Twitter. He's at Alex Kidwell. I'm at Rob Sestrino. We've got a busy week on the post-show recaps between we are coming in on the home stretch of House of Cards Season 5. On Monday night, we should have our penultimate recap podcast of chapters 62, 63, and 64. We will have a finale recap, a Season 5 finale recap sometime late in the week. Also, I will have a Better Call Saul Season 3 finale podcast with Antonio Mazzara. So a lot of stuff going on the Post Show Recaps. You can subscribe to our main feed, postshowrecaps.com/iTunes, or for just Walking Dead and Fear the Walking Dead, postshowrecaps.com/TWD iTunes. Alex, anything else?
Brains.
Brains.
That is all.
Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.